dying, Father, is nothing less. Ever since I was a child, I had the feeling that something is missing in me. I want to know why I'm here. Can any of us know that?
Become yourself. Then God and the devil don't matter.
I want to learn. I want to understand. Be careful. Can you find the force to enable these two quite opposite lines to live together in yourself? At any moment, the wolf can devour the lamb.
And you must learn what it means to become responsible.
This is an exact crisis. And that is why you are here.
To the unknown future. This is Red Ice Radio. For the Seeker.
Think and know the question. I must strive to know.
Welcome aboard, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for listening to Red Ice Radio headquarters in Sweden, Scandinavia, a country in the headlines for the last week now. And as we've said before several times and actually warned about, this is a place of increased problems and issues, and for good reason. It's a country undergoing a catharsis, something that we'll continue to address in other programs and commentaries to come. But right now, though, we're going to talk with Julia and BJ Davis about their documentary film Top Priority, The Terror Within. Julia Davis is a national security whistleblower, anti-terrorism immigration expert who exposed glaring shortcomings in the processing of applicants for admission into the U.S. from terrorist countries. Julia served as a customs and border protection officer at the San Ysidro port of entry, the largest and busiest land border crossing in the U.S. and in the world. Her speaking out about these errors and failures led instead to the government turning their eyes on her, BJ, and their families. Enduring harassment and spying for close to 9 years now, they are finally talking about this very important case. There's even connections to the actress Brittany Murphy and her husband's very strange deaths as well. So, as we do now and then, we'll make both hours available for free for non-members today. So listen and learn. Much more to come. All right, welcome Julia and BJ Davis joining us here today on the program. Thank you to both of you, first of all, for coming on the show. Good to have you with us.
Thank you, Henrik. Great to be here.
Thank you very much for having us.
Absolutely. This is a very important story. I'm glad I got an email from you guys and kind of gotten a heads up on basically what has been going on, because this is a huge story and I've never heard about it before. It's been going on for a long time, and I want to make sure now, right in the beginning here, that we kind of set the stage in the right way and make sure that we get to Julia's story as much as possible. So I'm just going to ask you guys to kind of just jump into it and give us a little bit of the background of what we're going to get into, so people know, kind of where you're coming from. So please go ahead, guys.
Yes, thank you, Henrik. And you started with a very important point, is that most people around the world have not heard about this story yet. And it's actually meant that way by the U.S. government. It's one of the best-kept secrets that is only now breaking through the media barriers. And it has to do with me working for the Department of Homeland Security at the biggest and busiest land border crossing in the United States, and reporting inefficient processing of people from terrorist countries into the United States. And I made this report to the FBI's Joint Terrorism Task Force, and Homeland Security does not like to be exposed and being ineffective and not doing their job when American people are being led to believe that we are being protected from terrorism and that borders are safe. And very much the opposite is true. So in response to me embarrassing Homeland Security, I have endured, along with my family and witnesses, the wrath of American government, where they declared me a domestic terrorist, which was absolutely false designation, raided our home with a Black Hawk helicopter and a 27-man special response team, and it actually expanded more manpower and more resources than they did for the raid of the compound where bin Laden was said to be hiding.
Well, that's interesting. Now, obviously, we'll get into your background story as a, you know, for your former Customs and Border Protection agent. BJ, maybe you can just tell us, you know, how you were all involved in this story as well, so we get an introduction to you.
Well, my background is in the film and television industry, and Julie and I have been married for 20 years now, but on the onset of the story, we had been together for 12 years, and they just, when they attacked Julie, obviously, I was going to respond to that and defend ourselves as best we could. We were standing in the shadow of a Goliath, the giant, the American government with a blank paycheck, with unlimited manpower and resources to deny, discredit, and destroy whistleblowers. Whistleblowers, I'm sure, are universal, and the retaliatory response by governments and entities involved and dedicated to covering up dirty deeds really exert all their forces to do it and to first distract from the facts and then destroy the person making the report. So Julia is an aeronautical engineer by her education, and was the government was quite happy to have her because she speaks several languages, and she concurrently was being processed as an FBI agent. So she had been vetted and investigated her background by the NSA, the CIA, the ATF. She graduated with honors from the Federal Training Institute in Georgia here in the United States. And everybody wanted her, and concurrently she was being processed, as I said, by the FBI to be a special agent. So her making this protected disclosure on the 4th of July, concurrent with there being a red flag alert, this is what led to the attack on her first and foremost, and then her family. It was just a fluke and a coincidence, Henrik, that we were able to film everything and audio tape everything, and that's what threw the train off the tracks for them, because most people that they target and retaliate against don't have the resources or the ability to do that.
And to answer your question, Henrik, the way BJ was swept up in it is when they attacked me, they attacked both of us at once, because their ultimate goal was to have me denaturalized and deported. So they have arrested us both on false immigration charges, and we were completely vindicated of them because obviously we didn't get married for immigration purposes. And that was very much a baseless allegation, but that's how they got BJ swept up in the whole process. And obviously, you know, husband and wife rely on each other and to support them. So if they can take both of them out, it definitely seemed to them like a case where they could possibly destroy us completely.
Yeah, indeed. We're going to obviously get into some of the details of, you know, what has happened and everything else. But when did you start working for the U.S. Customs and Border Protection, Julia?
Back in 2002. And I actually went in federal law enforcement because of 9/11. And I was very much determined to help protect this great nation from terrorism, and so that was one of the main reasons why I wanted to work for Homeland Security. And so that was the time period, and that's what prompted me.
And this, obviously, as you said, took her on July 4th, 2004. So let's just kind of get into what happened there. And if there's something, by the way, you want to share in terms of how it was to work there in overall, and what you saw, I guess that there was a lot of maybe different things that led up to this, or was this a one-time event, if you will, that the first time you kind of stumbled over that something was not quite right?
When I started to work at the port, I loved it. It was definitely very much different one day from the next. It was challenging, and I found it a very interesting place to work, and I was quickly promoted and ended up working in an elite team that deals with entries of people from countries other than Mexico, which specifically includes terrorist countries and terrorist activities. And in that capacity, my job was to process entries of all the aliens from the previous shift and put them into Homeland Security databases. And that's how I discovered that we had unprecedented numbers of people from terrorist countries that have been allowed to enter the United States on 4th of July 2004. And what made it especially unusual is that we had specific intelligence alerts before the fact. We were told that members of Al-Qaeda were plotting to come into the U.S. using land borders with Mexico, and one of the dates when suspected activity was to take place was 4th of July, so that was designated as a special date to watch. And we would normally get maybe between 5 to 15 people in an entire month from terrorist countries, and here we had 23 in 10 hours. So the numbers themselves were already a red flag, and especially when you think that there was an intelligence alert that we were to be on the lookout for things like that. And then when I looked at the paperwork, I saw that none of the procedures that were supposed to be followed for people from terrorist countries, none of those steps were taken. They didn't take their fingerprints. They didn't copy any documents. No one asked them any questions as to why they left the United States and where they were going. And all of it seemed highly irregular. And I took it to the port director, and he was equally alarmed as I was when he found out about it. The first time he heard about it was from me. And he told me to take it to Intel. And when I went there, I nearly fainted when I saw that their door was locked. Apparently, they all had gotten a day off for this holiday that's supposed to be such an important day to watch. So there was no one in Intel for me to give this information to. And the port director, not wanting the agency to be embarrassed, told me just put it in their intake box. They'll get to it later. But I knew, according to our procedures, that if anything that could even remotely be related to terrorism was happening, we were supposed to notify Joint Terrorism Task Force with the FBI. So as soon as I came home after my shift and I was no longer under port director's orders, I called the FBI and made the written report to them as well so that these events could be investigated. Yeah. And from that point on, my life was never the same.
Oh, wow. That's just incredible. I mean, I've entered over the U.S. border, and I have to do all those things, although I'm coming from Sweden, which is not a, you know, a classified terrorist country as far as I know. So that's just, that's amazing. What's the procedure here? Why did this happen? Let's just kind of get right into it here. What is going on?
Well, there are a couple of options that could be considered. One is this process was called discretionary, which is a very dangerous thing to do, because if an officer processing these entries is lazy or maybe in a hurry to take their lunch, if something is discretionary, they may not bother to do it. So incompetence is one possibility, but another thing that I think is also something to be taken seriously is that traditionally Customs is one of the most corrupt federal agencies in the United States, if not the most corrupt. In fact, one of the former port directors from the same port where I used to work, Daphne Kaganap, was prosecuted, convicted, and pleaded guilty to accepting bribes for letting illegal aliens and drugs across the border. So that's also a possibility that someone cashed in on that, and that's why none of the procedures were followed. And obviously, there are probably some other possibilities that we may not be fully aware of. But if you think about the magnitude of the response with Black Hawks, and they even sent airplanes to conduct surveillance. They used OnStar to listen to what was being said inside our vehicles. Just the sheer magnitude of it seems to suggest that there was something big underway that my report interrupted.
Interesting. Which countries were on the terrorist country list at the time? It is 2004, I guess. I suspect that this has changed since, but do you know from what countries these 23 people were from?
It was quite a long list, but Some of the countries included Iran, Iraq, Brazil, and so those are some of the countries that were on that list.
And have you any idea to this day if these people were from any kind of known organization or anything like that, any kind of group that we know of?
That's another thing that will make you fall down. When we sued Homeland Security later and prevailed, they had to disclose all of these documents in litigation. So one of the documents they had to release was a report about my investigation based on my report to the FBI. And what we saw is that they opened and closed this report on the same day, saying that no action and no investigation was necessary. So as we're speaking here today, no one knows who the 23 were, where they went, and for some reason, Homeland Security does not want us to know, and they don't want to know themselves. So they concentrated on investigating me instead.
Well, that's interesting. That's kind of awkward. So can we make the suggestion here that it was, as we know, with the false flag attacks and everything else that's ongoing, unfortunately, they have an interest, it seems, to actually use people for terrorism in different scenarios. We can certainly get into the reasons for that. But is that what we're talking about here in this case, do you guys think?
It's definitely a possibility. It's a strong possibility.
Well, they're selling theater, terror theater 101. You know, if they can keep the people terrorized, they won't be focused on the real events around them that's being manipulated behind the scenes.
And we've seen this with previous scenarios like the underwear bomber and everything else. This, you know, eyewitness testimony has started about the well-dressed man that actually escorted this gentleman beyond the passport control and everything else. So that although that there is a kind of a structure in place, if you will, to kind of try to deal with some of these things, what ends up happening is that some of these people who are, you know, later charged for terrorism or for, you know, being accused that they were intentionally going to try to do some terrorism within the country, then those that protection, if you will, the border literally is dropped and these people are let in. And that's what we're seeing in this case. Now, is there anyone like head responsible person for this that actually, you know, signed off and basically made sure that no one could continue inquire further into this, Julia?
Well, there is one person that definitely played major part in organizing these attacks on me. So I have to think that you know, he was involved in, you know, whatever events were taking place, and that's former Commissioner of Customs, Robert Bonner, who is a close right-hand associate of former President Bush. And Bonner was notified about my report to the FBI, and he immediately started asking if there was any dirt that they had on me, if I was being investigated for anything whatsoever. And that, again, we found out in litigation by getting copies of their emails. And in response, port officials said, no, she's not investigated for anything right now. But within 2 weeks, that would change. And I was a subject of 19 investigations. And by the time we started to sue the Department of Homeland Security, it was 54 cases. And they had given us all of the case numbers for all of those cases. So it's really unprecedented magnitude. And you mentioned the underwear bomber. I think that it's very interesting. The timing of it corresponded with the same time when the former head of Homeland Security, Michael Chertoff, was actively proposing the installation of the invasive airport scanners.
Yes.
And they have tried every which way to get those installed, and nothing worked. And then all of a sudden, the underwear bomber comes to be, and then they have their excuse to put those in. And funny enough, those scanners didn't even detect the kind of powder that he was alleged to have on him. So all of it is very suspicious.
Definitely. Now, did any of your colleagues react to this in any way and followed up with you or similarly kind of raised concern about this?
My supervisor, Leonard Rios, had actively stood up for me and was attacked in turn as well. And he retired, and he was a veteran of 25 years with the agency. he was very shocked with the way he was being treated just because he stood up for me and he said that I did absolutely nothing wrong and that's exactly what needed to be done. And then there were other port directors that have also spoken out during hearings and said that I did the right thing. But of course, you know, people, a lot of those people were concerned for keeping their positions, but there was definitely concern by conscious people working at the border that something was very highly irregular.
Right. So whether we're talking about the real deal, so to speak, in terms of, you know, quote unquote, real terrorism or, you know, co-sponsored, you know, subsidized terrorism by government, basically. Nonetheless, I think this question is still important. Do you think that your inquiry into this actually resulted in kind of thwarting any attempts at terrorism within the U.S.?
I think that that's exactly what happened. I think that that is the whole reason why they had expended such enormous resources and efforts to silence me. And instead of investigating these people, something about it makes me think that they already knew who the people were and where they were going. And that's why their primary interest was to make me stop talking.
So what was the reason given to you, you know, that you were fired and everything? And remind us again, actually, when this happened, you know, unless we didn't bring that up yet.
Actually, when they started to harass me and investigate me to death, I resigned and I filed a lawsuit against Homeland Security, and the judge agreed with me and said that my resignation was involuntary and was caused by the government's illegal conduct towards me. So, actually, it was after that court ruling where they were ordered to pay me damages and my resignation was found to be caused by their retaliation. All of a sudden, a couple of weeks later, there's a Black Hawk helicopter and a SWAT team raiding our house, and they immediately filed a motion with that court to say we're going to find her to be an illegal alien, and illegal aliens have no right to a federal workplace free of discrimination. Therefore, we shouldn't have to honor the order, throw the order out. And of course, the judge had a good laugh at that and told them that it was a wishful thinking on their part, but that was part of their intent.
But in court, you won. You were vindicated, basically, on this.
Yes, in several different venues. First, in administrative court, we won a discrimination suit, and then they had charged us twice and imprisoned us twice on false charges. We were completely vindicated both times and also found to be factually innocent, and the government was ordered to return everything they took from our home and office because they never had a search warrant, but they had taken a lot of things. And then we sued the government, and only a couple weeks before the jury trial, they decided to settle the case because obviously they did not want the jury to hear any of this.
So tell us when the eyes, I guess, was turned on you instead, and if this was, I guess, a gradual process. I mean, you can explain, both of you guys, for us a little bit how this started and what kind of some of the things that happened, and if it was very dramatic from the start or if there was more maybe subtle things that you realized that you were being, you know, watched or something like that. Kind of explain this for us.
Yes, it started almost immediately after my report, and at first we thought it was very strange, but once I started to be served with notice of investigation, we figured out what was going on. But we noticed that there would be people in apartment buildings nearby that were watching us with binoculars, and then also we would notice cars following us, and or we would go in a restaurant and someone would sit down next to us and lay a device on the table that looked like a phone but was actually a recorder and sit there with a newspaper and you know, not order anything the entire time and just watch what we were doing. And we had continually taken pictures of this surveillance, and later on we were tickled to read in their report that where they said the targets were very surveillance savvy and have been photographing our agents that were following them. So it was confirmed, even though at the time you probably would think that it couldn't be happening in a civilized country like the United States, but that's exactly what was going on. If you saw a film, Enemy of the State,
sure,
that is it's kind of similar to what happened to us, where you come to the bank, you find out your accounts have been closed, emptied completely. There would be a levy on the account, your credit cards cut off, bank account canceled, people in cars following you, airplanes following you. And actually, that's in our documentary. Homeland Security admitted that they sent an airplane to conduct surveillance of us, as well as a Black Hawk helicopter. And so it was surreal, absolutely surreal. And if it wasn't caught on videotape, people would probably have a hard time believing that something like this is possible. If it was written as a movie, you'd be told to tone it down. But
BJ, tell us kind of your experience on this as well. And if you then shot a lot of this on video and stuff like that, tell us about this.
Yes, Henrik, we when you're combating the U.S. government, I mean, obviously, if we had four attorneys, they had 12 or 15 attorneys, and they have a blank check. So what we did was to fall back to what gifts and abilities we have, and that's the movie camera and still photos. So we literally began that. We had cameras inside our home where they did sneak and peek burglaries under the Patriot Act. So we have them inside the home illegally. We have them outside. For 2 years, this is in writing, and it's represented, it's exhibited in the documentary, Top Priority, The Terror Within, where we had eight agents, Henrik, following us, and those guys averaged a starting base salary of $150,000 a year. So with overtime and what have you, eight agents for 2 years, that's in excess of $4 million right there, following Julia Davis and I around. And it, and then there you have a fixed-wing airplanes, which we have, and per their own court discovery, they validate. Then the Black Hawk helicopters, and they did it to our witnesses, our attorneys, and certainly to Julia and I.
Did you guys have to move around a lot as well to try to move to different places and such, or were you how did this work out for you? We're talking about almost 8 years, almost nine, I guess. That's a long time.
Yeah, no, it's been quite a decade, to say the least. We have had the good opportunity to have several homes and family supporting us. So we never really tried to give away our locations as such, because obviously being followed like that, and then always subject to being attacked.
And then with BJ's background, starting in stunts, he's not the easiest person to follow by car. he definitely gave them a run for their money.
Well, I've had the good fortune that years ago I trained LAPD officers on executive protection driving, and then obviously the action sequences for movies, and they couldn't keep up.
Well, so if these are court cases that have been won on your end, why are you guys doing this show with us? You should be on CBS, CNN, and all these channels, Fox, right?
Well, that's the catch.
Yeah, it's very interesting what we have run into, and that's what we thought. We were very naive about these things when we started to deal with this ordeal. We thought, surely the media is going to be outraged. Everyone's going to be outraged to hear that the government had done this, especially since there are helicopters galore and arrests and vindications and court cases. So we had CBS come to our house, and they spent over 8 hours here interviewing us. We had shown them multitude of documents to corroborate every single point we're making. We'd given them video, audio. The air date was set for my birthday in 2011. So we thought, okay, the case will get the media exposure. Then all of a sudden, we are being told that someone from high above had heard from Homeland Security, who told them, don't run with the story. And so they're content not to run with the story. And it's never been aired. And then when we started researching it more, apparently the same thing happened to the big tobacco whistleblower, Jeffrey Wigand, where they had filmed his interview but never aired it until the movie came out, where Russell Crowe played him. And then all of a sudden, they decided to air the interview that they've had in the can for a very long time. So it's really... it's not surprising probably to most people that are following current events, but the mainstream media is dangerously closed and interwoven with powers that be.
Oh, indeed. So, Julia, what is this really about then at this stage? Do they really think that you're a terrorist? I mean, or is it that you know something about this and this is obviously a problem? It's a leak in the official story, if you will, of how things should be handled. And therefore, what do you think that they're attempting to do at this stage with both of you guys?
I think that they're very well aware that I'm not a terrorist, and in their own paperwork it explained how they arrived to that designation. They said it was based on derogatory statements against the government in our lawsuits and in my articles that I'm actually continuing to write as a Homeland Security Examiner, blowing the whistle on what is wrong with the government. So I think that they only use that designation to avoid following the law and the Constitution, because that way they could do warrantless surveillance and warrantless searches and seizures and avoid accountability. And at this point, our goal is to tell people about the story so that if they're dealing with something like this, hopefully they will be inspired and hopefully they will learn something that will help them fight and prevail and stand up for their rights, and to show people that there are serious problems in our judiciary and our mainstream media and our homeland security and the way the borders are being handled, the way the security theater related to terrorism is being shoved down our throats. So hopefully people will be awakened by this case and realize that whistleblower retaliation something to do with concerned citizens, not only in America, but all over the world. Yeah. Whistleblowers are the ones that cause crimes to be solved and stopped and get the corruption exposed.
You did your job and you did it well. And for that, you know, you're being punished, basically.
Exactly. That's what happened. And I did the job better than they wanted me to. And actually, after I had exposed that they were not following the rules in the what was called NSEERS, National System for Entry Exit Registration, that was meant to ask pertinent questions of people, for example, like the Boston Bombers case, where they said they didn't know why they went to Russia, no one asked any questions. Well, that system was set up to do exactly that, to ask them, why did you leave the U.S., where did you go, to take their pocketbooks and copy the addresses and see if maybe any of the people they're talking to are related to terrorist organizations. But instead of doing something to fix that broken system, they went and canceled NSEERS altogether. So, I mean, talking about moving backwards instead of evolving, the system is just disintegrating.
Yeah, definitely, it's crazy. What are the borders like in, let's say, towards Mexico and Canada? I mean, usually when you go through, you know, flying into the U.S. directly, you have to go through the regular hoops, obviously, and it's always an ordeal. But obviously, it's a major problem if some people are, for whatever reason, then let out of that, you know, standard in inquiry or whatnot. But how, do you know anything about how things are kind of on the ground, if you will, towards Mexico and Canada?
Yeah, our land borders are very porous, and largely it has to do with them being grossly understaffed. For example, in the San Ysidro, out of 26 lanes of traffic, normally only 3 or 4 are open just because there aren't enough customs officers to man them. So if you think about it, and the officers being told to conduct 10 to 30 second inspections, sometimes they're being told that the traffic is backed up, don't check any trucks, pull all the dogs off the primary. It creates countless opportunities for the border to be penetrated by aliens, terrorists, drugs, you name it. So the land borders are very much wide open, and all they would have to do is, instead of wasting money the way they're doing right now, find $5.5 billion of the stimulus money is being spent on making borders ports of entry, making them more green, and they're planting drought-resistant cacti and installing low-flow toilets. $5.5 billion to do that. I mean, it's important to save the planet, but at the same time, there should be equal priority to actually hiring enough people to do the job and to protect the borders if they indeed were taking the terror threat as seriously as they claim to.
Oh, well, yeah, indeed. Wanted to ask you guys what kind of technology that, you know, potentially what was used on you. We know that obviously when they send a big helicopter for you guys, that's also a level of theatrics. It's to intimidate you guys more openly so that you know what's going on. But did you guys hire any people that could look for bugs and see if your phones were tapped, stuff like that?
Yes, we did do that. And then actually some of the government's documents refer to installing certain devices that not all of them have been found to date, but we definitely did a lot of that to try to protect ourselves. But what they mainly rely on doesn't require them to install a lot of physical devices because, for example, OnStar, that is now installed in majority of the vehicles here in the U.S., and it allows them to actually remotely turn on the mic to where they can hear everything that's being said inside of the car, in addition to being able to track exactly where the car is. And they have used that on us, even though we had cut off the OnStar service as soon as we bought our vehicles. We never wanted to have that system, but they're able to override it. So whether or not you're using that system, they can. And then the same applies to them reading emails. And unfortunately, courts have been agreeing with them that they don't need to have a warrant to read emails. So a lot of these techniques just rely on their ability to penetrate every area of your life and come into your home and do sneak and peek incursions and copy your documents. And obviously, as far as computers go, they have very sophisticated programs that are not detected by programs that are designed to combat viruses and toolkits and keyloggers, but they're very actively using that. So they can pretty much be inside your bedroom, inside your car, wherever you have a laptop, and they want you, a lot of times they want you to know that they're doing it so that you're constantly ill at ease and also hoping that you will make a police report to say that you're being followed. And then they could say, oh, look, what a nutcase. They must be insane. Maybe we should send them for a psychiatric evaluation. So it's a multi-pronged attack.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Double insult is with the OnStar, the government actually pays OnStar $150 an hour to monitor you without a warrant. And the other insult to taxpayers in the U.S., and I'm sure expanding around the world, is that you can't sue OnStar for violating your privacy.
Well, that's incredible. Do you guys know if this can actually be disabled in some way, despite of, you know, whatever, actually, I don't know exactly what the kind of devices in your car, if this can be removed in some way. You guys know?
The way they have it built, it's like an octopus that is connected to just pretty much every part of your car. So, for example, if you're hitting gas, you're hitting brakes, they know about it. If you're putting gas in your car, if you're putting oil in it, they know it. And they know how fast you're driving and where. And when we went to try to get it removed, they quoted us over $10,000. And even then, they couldn't guarantee that it would solve the problem and remove every part of the system from the car.
Wow. Yeah, they could shut down your car remotely, like brake and turn off to the side and just shut it off for you. Yeah, it's incredible, yes, the technology. Yes. Yeah.
Yes, and then also every cell phone, unless it's turned off and the battery taken out, is another remotely activated microphone where they can listen in to what's going on in a certain range around your telephone as well. And the only way to combat that is to have the battery taken out or to have a phone in the metal box where the signal doesn't get through. But literally, it's the technology that should be used to detect actual crimes is being used to intimidate and set up innocent citizens.
Oh, definitely. We know about I forget the name of the browser right now that they used, but that was one way they did it, through Facebook and everything else. I guess you just see when you upload your photos. There is GPS coordinates in the photos and everything else, and you can do live searches on Twitter, I think, and Facebook as well. And then we had this recent scandal is it unfolding right now with the IRS, spying on the Tea Party. We've had Department of Justice spying, I think, on the Occupy movement and everything else. So this is pretty much standard procedure right now, isn't it?
Yes, and I'm glad you brought that up because on directives from the Department of Homeland Security, from Bonner and his underlings, we were also attacked by the IRS, and we're still going through being audited for multiple years, starting in exactly the year when I made my whistleblowing disclosure and up to a certain point in time. And not only did they audit us and levied our accounts, funny enough, they always try to do that on the date of that is important to you somehow. For example, when we premiered the documentary Top Priority at the Academy, on that date they went and emptied our accounts again with an IRS levy, and they also did it on my birthday. They also did it on Christmas Eve, and so it's very much coordinated effort, and that is being used to harass and intimidate people. And not only did they do it to us, but they had also audited two separate sets of attorneys that were representing us in the different venues of the case. And a lot of people would say that an audit is such an unpleasant thing to deal with that a lot of times people might be scared away from working on your case or helping you if they think that they might be audited by the IRS.
But Henrik, I think though you hit it on the head there too. Like Facebook, and you've got so many different social networks there that really there are elements of the government there monitoring and to data mining. They work in tandem with Paramount, CBS. It's the tentacles. That's why mainstream media, just defies the law and logic of covering genuine. I hate to use the word whistleblowers because that's just a testing ground for all people from around the world, where it is a means to retaliate against or violate your rights.
Yeah, indeed. It's not encouraging times, definitely not. Were your lives threatened openly at some point during all of this as well, or like under the radar? Did you guys actually talk with some of the people that were following you and stuff like that? How was the level of that?
Well, actually, we had tried approaching people that were following us, and they would peel off in a hurry. They would hit the gas very quickly and drive away. And, they were just like marching soldiers that were told what to do, and I guess didn't bother to ask any questions. At one point, we have counted over 100 people that were involved in attempted prosecutions and investigations against us, and I guess none of them asked any questions about how wrong it was. And as far as our lives being threatened, since they have declared us to be armed and dangerous before raiding our home with a Black Hawk helicopter and all of those agents in SWAT gear with assault weapons pointed at the house, if we were at home, we would not be sitting talking to you today, because with them declaring anyone armed and dangerous, that means shoot on sight. And I'm sure they would have claimed that there was a shootout and that we tried to attack somebody, and there would be no one left to tell the story. So we're only here because we didn't happen to be at the house when it happened. And unfortunately, my parents were at home and were terrorized and mistreated horribly, and my dad actually ended up having a heart attack while they were raiding the house and kept asking for medical assistance, and they laughed at him and scoffed at him, kept him in the sun, wouldn't let him take his heart medicine, and he ended up eventually dying from that, because the doctors said that when someone is having untreated heart attack and doesn't get oxygen, their heart tissue dies, and over half of his heart tissue died, and he didn't live very long after that. And all the while they were telling him, your daughter is a domestic terrorist. So he was thinking that simultaneously I'm being probably transported to Guantanamo. Jeez. So it was a horrific situation and absolute lack of any humanity in the way they have treated not only us, but our family and witnesses.
Yeah, Very sorry to hear that. Sorry to hear about your dad and all of this. It's truly horrible. Listen, guys, we should take a break here in just a few minutes. I wanted to ask you guys a little bit more about some of the video and audio material that you guys have in the DVD as well, that people actually can see some of this for themselves. We want to get out the websites and everything else as well for this. But BJ, maybe you can just share with us a little bit what you guys have in the video there. And I mean, again, it's like we're talking about 8 years of compiled material, I guess, and you guys have been pretty much filming and taping from the get-go of this thing.
Oh yes, that was the again, I said that was a means of defense for us, and then what became an offense to tell people the truth and show them. In the documentary, yes, it was an ongoing process, and the thing that'll really disturb you greater as we go through the story, the videographer who covered the Black Hawk helicopter footage landing at our property that almost crashed 3 times trying to land, actually was found dead in his home 90 days later at the age of 25, home alone.
Oh, boy. Yeah, okay. Well, we'll get into that in the second segment here. I also want to ask you about the connection to Brittany Murphy, of all people, because there is one, and that's pretty interesting. We'll get into that as well. Please, guys, give us the website so we know where to go to pick up a copy of the DVD.
The website is toppriorityMovie.com.
toppriorityMovie.com. We'll have that linked up on redicecreations.com as well. Okay, Julia and BJ, stay with us. We'll take a short break here at this point, and then we'll return with more in just a little bit.